from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Hey, fantasy football owners, I'm Matt Harmon.
And what's cracking up, James Coe? Join us on Reception Perception as we dive deep into wide receivers, the position that will make or break your fantasy team.
Follow and listen to Reception Perception on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is absolutely incrinculant. It really is. Fan Twitter. Fan Twitter brought to you by South Hills Kia, Peters Township. Visit them at southhillskia.net. The text line brought to you by Edgar Snyder & Associates, personal injury law firm, where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. Paul, you got Bugles. You're going old school with your little snack over there. Bugles and Mountain Dew limits. What means, do you make of this? Is this healthy?
Means the vending machine must have worked.
The first one didn't. No, it means I need caffeine. I'm falling asleep. That's what it means.
How about the Bugles?
I need a pick me. I always like Bugles.
Better than Fritos?
I like Fritos. I like Bugles. You know, I mix it up.
Guess who's going to come on the show next week? Brianna Kiesel.
Really?
Former Pitt great in basketball.
Good.
She's going to come talk about the viability of a WNBA team here. Plus, we can just talk to her about hoops. But you know what she said, Paul? I texted her to invite her on the radio with Paul Zeiss and myself. She said, thanks for reaching out. I'd love to join you. I've known Mr. Zeiss for years. Did you coach her?
No. But I covered her when she was at Pitt.
Ah.
Yes. She was like... If you remember the last NCAA team that Pitt had, she was...
Great player.
Yeah, she was... that would have been... I think that was a Susie's year.
That's going to be fun. Is she in town? I just asked her that. We could have her in studio.
Yeah, I don't think she is. I think no? She lives somewhere else, yeah.
All right. Well, we'll do that within the next week or so. Meantime, and I do want to talk about that topic as well, she lives in Maryland. Okay, she just told me that. Let's talk a little Steelers here. Let's go to Broderick Jones, because these quotes are just sort of mind-boggling. Really, I mean, we're in August here, and I think he's talking about how everybody's banged up this time of year. No, actually, the opposite is true. Nobody's banged up this time of year. At least they're not supposed to be. It's the preseason, and the whole... objective to me, if I'm a coach for preseason, is to have nobody banged up. I want to have TJ Watt and all my good players ready to go in the opener. Anyway, here's Broderick Jones with reporters, Paul. Let's see what we make of this, okay?
Okay.
I'm as healthy as I'm going to get, you know, with the season coming up. But everybody always playing week in and week out with some minor injury or something that they got to push through. So
when you say you're as healthy as you're going to get, what do you mean by that?
You know, like I said, I play O-line. You know, it's a physical brand of football here in Pittsburgh, PA. So, you know, everybody's going to have those little nicks and bruises. But you guys just got to continue to play through them.
Is it little? Or is it something that's going to need?
Yeah, it's nothing major.
Elbow, right?
Huh?
Elbow?
Multiple things, you know, so we just got to.
Is the brace inhibiting you? You got the brace on. Is it holding you back in any way?
No. I wouldn't. It's not the brace. You know, guys may think it is, but it's nothing wrong with the brace. It's just me being able to lock in with football and just continuing to grow as a player and trusting my game and, you know, just going from there. So.
All right, Paul. There's a lot there in a little bit of time. Our friend Benzie pressing early on with him. So multiple things, elbow. I mean, this sounds like we're talking to a guy on December 17th, not on August 22nd or wherever
yeah, exactly.
we are here.
If he's that banged up now and there's, you know, that many bumps and bruises associated with football or whatever that Mike Tomlin's saying is, are they doing it right?
Great question. And here's another one. If he were a quarterback, if they had taken traded up to take a quarterback in the first round yet last year, and this is where we were at with him, like he had just thrown 8 interceptions in a preseason game, we'd be freaking out. They traded up in the first round to get this guy. I thought he acquitted himself pretty well as a run blocker last season on the right side. But this preseason, that was cause for alarm the other day. And it wasn't like he was great as a pass blocker, by the way, last year. Okay, he was a rookie. He had a bad playoff game against Buffalo. I'm concerned. This was a guy they put enormous resources into.
Yes.
And it needs to pay off. It does. And it needs to pay off early. I know he's still very young. But that was concerning watching Greg Russo throw him around like he was a mosquito.
Right.
Your thoughts on Broderick here?
I mean, again, this isn't year one, is it? Am I missing something? It's not year one, right? It's year two for him.
If you would have told me last year when they took him that there would be severe doubt going into year two whether Broderick Jones would supplant Dan Moore, I would say then don't make the pick.
Exactly.
Don't trade up and make the pick at number, what'd they get him, 14th? He was the 14th pick.
They traded up. They traded up. You know what I mean? They traded up for him. When you trade up for a guy, I hate to say it this way, but it almost has to be a can't miss, doesn't it?
Can't miss, play immediately, guy. Okay.
And I think
one year is done. He did play, but this is not, it doesn't appear to be a very good situation right now. What were you going to say?
Well, I was going to say that I think one of the things about this whole situation is this. If, as we're told, or at least people are, you know, have spoken for Broderick Jones, if the reason he has not played well is because he's not 100% healthy, then he shouldn't be playing. I said the same thing about Ke'Bryan Hayes. If he can't swing a bat, he should not be playing.
Benzie phrased this very well in his column today, I might add. The headline is this, Paul. If Broderick Jones is hurt, that's concerning, but it may be even more concerning if he isn't hurt. I would agree with that. And it wasn't just one snap the other night. He was just getting railroaded by a guy who had 5 sacks last year. Come on.
Well, I will say this. It's just, you know, it's just one of those situations where you can't make excuses for guys for much longer. You know what I mean?
Well,
he's either, if he's not healthy, he's not healthy. Well, then he shouldn't. You know what I'm saying?
If you had to bet on one starting right now in the Arthur Smith Bowl in Atlanta, would it be Moore or Jones? I think Moore's going to start, assuming Fatanu's ready, and he apparently said he is or will be. I think Dan Moore's going to start the opening game. Limits, you agree?
I'm in the minority. I think Broderick Jones is going to start.
At left tackle?
I think they're going to start him at left tackle and Fatanu at right. I think they'll rip the Band-Aid off.
Something's got to change, man. I guess, you know, preseason games usually aren't very significant, but I need to see Broderick Jones in this game on Saturday, assuming he's healthy enough to play, like block somebody.
And I want to see him at left.
I don't care if it's a grocery store clerk. I need him to block somebody who's trying to rush the passer before I'm willing to put him in there against Matthew Judon and the Falcons. Doesn't he play for them now?
He does. They traded for him, and they got Justin Simmons, the safety.
I mean, you're walking into what's going to be an incredibly loud environment indoors there. I don't trust him right now, whether it's injury or what he did the other night. And by the way, I think part of this is their fault for making the guy switch from right to left tackle all the time. And there's a split opinion out there. You have some people who think that's no big deal. We've had guys on this show who played offensive line in the NFL, John Runyon, who said that for some guys, switching sides is like learning a new language.
Well, considering Dan Moore can't do it.
Yeah, apparently it is for Dan Moore. I thought they valued versatility around here. He's wholly incapable of playing the right side. And admittedly, he says, I can't do it. What does that say about it? If it was so easy, why can't he do it?
I think the biggest thing about it is, first of all, can I just say this?
Yes. Yes, you can.
I've really gotten worn down with the cavalcade of...
It's a good word.
...of what I would call social media scouts who want to explain, like, offensive line play and think because they use the jargon and all this other stuff, you know what I mean? Or want to explain quarterback play and think because they use the jargon and a few cut-ups, they know what the hell they're talking about. There's like a cottage industry of these people.
How does that pertain to him? You mean people say...
People talking about, you know, Broderick Jones or Dan Moore or whatever, you know what I mean? And, you know, trying to use jargon to make it seem like they have some sort of insight that the rest of us don't have, even though we can all see with our own eyes who's getting the job done and who's not.
That was a disaster the other night. I don't think it can be minimized. It was embarrassing. I don't agree with people. I think it's the laziest explanation of all when you have people say he didn't feel like playing. He wasn't into it.
Right.
This is a guy fighting for his NFL life. Fighting to be a starter. Listen, I'll add to Benzie's headline. If he's not injured and or if he is injured, either way, forget about all that. If he's not into the games, that would be the biggest concern of all. And I don't believe that for a second. I don't believe that for a second. Limits, I think you were buying that yesterday.
Yeah, I was. I think he's injured. Like, I think that this is something that is actually physically not hurting him, but is holding him back from being the true offensive lineman that we saw on the right side last season. I mean, did he just have one bad game? We saw last year how capable he is at the right side of the line.
Not a great pass blocker last year either, I would offer.
Good in the run game, though.
But, Paul, are you buying that? Listen, if he wasn't into a game, I don't care if it's a preseason game, the guy's trying to make his mark in the NFL.
Right.
I'm not buying that. If that were the case, then I'd be really, really concerned about it.
I would be very, very concerned, for sure. Because if a guy's not, if you're not into the game, when you're playing for your life, your football life, as you say, essentially, what are we talking about?
I just think that's the laziest explanation people can give.
Yeah.
Whether it's a team or a player. Oh, yeah, they didn't try. Yes, they did in almost every case. In almost every case, yes, they did. which I guess is even, maybe that's even more concerning.
Maybe he gave it the old college try.
Maybe he did.
And
I'm also aware that this is a guy who didn't get a ton of starts in college. Like, I'm not saying I won't be patient with Broderick Jones. My real beef here is that the Steelers haven't put him at his natural position and said, go. They've jerked him around is what they've done. And if it's true, what people say who have played in the NFL, some of them on this show have said it, that it is very difficult for some people to go from the left side to the right side.
Right.
Then they've done him an incredible, and their team, an incredible disservice by jerking him around.
My thing is, when you drafted Troy Fontenot, I said this when they drafted him. From day one of rookie minicamp, OTA, rookie OTA, you know, offseason OTA, whatever the hell team activities they had, and then training camp, from day one, Broderick Jones at left, Fontenot at right, and they take as many reps as possible. Period. They take as many reps as possible. So they are ready to play when the season begins. And the fact that did not happen is ridiculous. To me, it's almost malpractice, Joe.
Malpractice is a great word.
It really is.
And
if you want a guy to learn how to play a position who's a young guy, you know the best way to do it? Let him play the position.
Let him play the position. And I know it's some different people making the decisions, but why should anybody believe that the Steelers know what they're doing with offensive linemen? We've used these examples a lot over the last couple weeks. They thought it was a great idea to sink money into Chukwuma Okorafor. They tried him at left tackle till they realized he can't play there. Then they put him back on the right side. Again, if it's so easy, why can't all these guys toggle back and forth?
Right.
They thought it was a great idea to draft an undersized guard from Illinois who didn't want to play center and put him in front of Ben in his last season. That turned out well. They thought it was a good idea to play Kevin Dotson at a position different than he played in college, a different side. He stunk here a lot of the time, and then he goes to the LA Rams and becomes one of the best offensive linemen in the sport. Shall I continue? I mean, why should we trust that they're doing the right thing or know what they're doing with Broderick Jones?
Well, again, we talk a lot about position coaches. I sometimes think we talk probably too much at times about position coaches. But exactly what is the resume of, what's his name, Sean Meyer or Pat Meyer?
Pat Meyer, yeah.
Yeah, Pat Meyer. What exactly is the resume of him that we should at least not say, is he doing the right things with his offensive line? Isn't that a fair question?
It's fair.
Here's the other thing. It's not like they haven't given him resources to work with. They've drafted offensive linemen almost every single year. And not, you know, sixth rounders and seventh rounders. They've used high picks on offensive linemen.
And they don't have a ton of time for this to gel. That's the other thing. And realizing, again, they might have two rookies and a 22-year-old or whatever Jones is in their lineup. That's okay. People across sports win with young people now. You know?
Mm-hmm.
People play right away and you win right away. So that's what this camp was about. They also didn't have Zach Fraser, I might add, as a first-team player for a lot of camp. They're going to Atlanta here in a couple weeks, and they need to win early. Lest I remind you what their schedule is late in the season, they got to bank as many early wins as they can get, because after the bye, they have the likes in a row of Baltimore, Cleveland, Cincy, Cleveland, Philly, Baltimore, Kansas City, and Cincy. I would suggest they get some wins in the bank early.
Yeah.
And it looks like an offensive line that's going to take a while because of injury, because of lackluster play, because of who knows how many. It just doesn't look like it's going to be ready to start the season. I hope I'm wrong. I hope I'm very wrong. But it doesn't look that way. Call now to win two tickets.
I mean,
go ahead.
My point is, if you are trying to build your offensive line, and you have two first-round picks, and what was Fraser, a second-round pick, right? You have three extremely young guys that you went way out on a limb in terms of drafting them high. What is the sense of using, you know, wasting time with Herbig taking snaps at center, Dan Moore taking snaps at left, you know, tackle or whatever, and that strategy made no sense to me from day one. I said from day one, put Fraser at center because give him as many reps between now and the season.
Yeah. Yes.
And the same thing with the two tackles. Makes no sense to me.
Now, the one tackle got hurt, but they were also, it's just the flip-flopping with Jones, again, I just think is a disservice. And I do wonder about this camp and the nature of it. And how there's this endless quest to prove that we're the big, bad physical Steelers. You even saw or heard at the beginning of that line. What did Jones say early in that interview there? limits?
With that, I'm as healthy as I'm going to get, you know, with the season coming up. But everybody always playing week in and week out with some minor injury or something that they got to push through. So,
and then he went on to say, you know, playing this brand of physical football in Pittsburgh, PA. Come on, convert a fourth and one. How about that? You know, get a yard when you need it.
Is it that much different, the brand of physicality that's going on during the games between the
Here's
two teams?
The thing,
maybe practice is different, but
the brand,
really?
The brand of physicality here, there's a lot of nerve, I think, and delusion on the part of people to think that the Steelers play a more physical brand of football than anybody else. In fact, offensively, it's a lot of times a less physical brand. They play a pretty physical brand of football. Do they play more physical in Baltimore, right? Cincy, Houston, Kansas City, Philadelphia, right? Green Bay, Minnesota, Rams, Niners, Seahawks. It's just, it's a fallacy here. Here in Pittsburgh, PA, we play a pretty physical brand of football. That's why I'm hurt. What? I don't get it, Paul.
Yeah. I think that it's one of those developments we have to really watch.
And they seem to be chasing that so much. It's what Andy Weidel talks about. It's how they've drafted. There's this desperate quest to recapture the days of glory when the Steelers beat everybody up. I don't know. It just seems like an endless quest here. Maybe it'll come more to fruition this year.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Hey, fantasy football owners, the road to winning your fantasy football championship starts now. I'm Matt Harmon from Reception Perception. Join me and James Coe as we take a deep dive into the position that's going to make or break your fantasy roster, wide receivers. We analyze route running, target share, and all the metrics that matter, giving you the insights you need to draft the best wide receivers. As you prep for your draft, let us give you the coverage you need. Follow and listen to Reception Perception on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, Paul, let's abruptly switch topics, because the general reminded me that Barry Bonds is headed into the Pirates Hall of Fame this weekend. First thought, unfiltered, first thoughts, I should say, that come into your mind when I mention the name Barry Bonds. Is it like Pete Carroll, where the first thing's a negative thought? With Barry, is it the throw against the Braves? What's the first thing you think of?
The fact that how idiotic it is he's not in the Hall of Fame. The greatest player in the history of, at least in my lifetime in baseball. Better than any of these other guys. Better than Aaron Judge. Better than, you know, A-Rod. Better than Ken Griffey. Better than whoever you want to name. In my lifetime, the best player. So that's the first thing that comes to mind. And honestly, if I was Bob Nutting, I would sign Barry Bonds to a 3-day contract. I'd even have to kick someone off the 40-man roster to make it happen. I'd activate him so that his Hall of Fame clock started over. And then I would actually announce at the end of the weekend, hopefully all of the old idiots that are still voting against him will be done voting by the time his next 10 years of being on the ballot expires. That's what I think.
I agree with every syllable and half syllable Paul just uttered. I think Barry Bonds should have his number retired by the Pirates. That's what I think. But I've learned, as I'm sure you have over the years, that there's a lot of bitterness toward him because he was an abrasive.
How do you think he's going to be received this weekend?
That's a good question.
When are they honoring him? Saturday, right?
That's a great question. He's had some cheers here before, but nothing wild. Will it be like the Yager reception? I don't think so. I think he'll get an ovation, maybe a partial standing ovation.
I think he's
it'll be warm, but it won't be wild. What do you think?
Yeah, that's a great way to describe it. I think people will. I don't think there'll be boos. I don't think there'll be. I think most people will give him, you know, the ovation he deserves.
What if he does get some boos? Are you going?
He's probably going to get some boos.
When is it? Saturday?
Saturday. Yeah.
I think he might get a couple.
It's going to be the least enthused cheers of all three, Leland, Sengian, and Bonds.
Why do people dislike him so much? Because he left, you know, like anybody would, to go get more money.
Well,
because his abrasive personality, because of the Braves game.
Right.
Because of the Braves game. And his playoff numbers. Though I'm not saying any of those are good reasons, but those are the reasons.
Well, he didn't perform the first couple of years in the playoffs for sure. The Braves game, I don't know that there's a lot of people that hold that against him. You know, I think there's a lot of other factors in that game. And when you talk to people,
there are.
I think it starts with his abrasive personality.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. And the reason I say that is because if you think about it, Andy Van Slyke wasn't much better in the playoffs, and he's beloved. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, of course.
He wasn't much better. And
I disagree here. And again, it's just anecdotally because of my interactions with people. I do think that he unfairly, in a way, is the lightning rod for that Braves game,
even though
a lot of things happen.
But I think it's a chicken or the egg thing. I think that it's because of his abrasive personality.
Yeah, could be.
You know what I mean? Like, for instance, the real villain in that inning is Jose Leand. And nobody ever talks about him. But if Jose Leand makes a play, they probably win the game.
Yeah, and C. Celespi could have made a better play.
But the umpire,
there's a lot going on there. I just think people hold it against him.
Right. My point is, Bonds made a play. You know? And who knows, back then there was replay, it might have been, you know, overturned. Like, he made a play, it was a half a second.
Well, the thing he didn't do was listen to Andy Van Slyke before the play and adjust his position.
But it doesn't matter. He made a play. He came up and made a play that was...
But that does matter to people.
It doesn't matter. But that's just, again, those are people that don't like him. It's just, I mean, seriously, those are people that just don't like Barry Bonds.
Here's what I would say.
If you're one of these people out here and you're holding against Barry Bonds because, well, Andy Van Slyke told him to move two steps over and he didn't, you're an idiot, okay?
I guess I'm an idiot.
You're an idiot.
I'm an idiot.
You're an idiot is what I'm telling you because that's stupid. Okay, he made a play. If you want to be mad at somebody, be mad at Jose Leand, who was the best defensive shortstop or best defensive second baseman or whatever in the league, and he couldn't field a simple ground ball and make a play. But if you're holding against Barry Bonds because you think that and because you think that, well, if he had moved two steps over, he still had to come up catching the ball. He still had to come up throwing. He still had to make a perfect throw. Okay? So to me, the people that are holding on to that are people that just don't like Barry Bonds. Listen. It's one of those things where, you know what? Don't piss on my leg and tell me it's raining. Just tell me, I don't like Barry Bonds. If you say that, I can respect that.
God bless you.
Yes.
Thank you. I'm telling you that people hold that against him. For whatever reason, you might be right. They just didn't like him in the first place.
Just say you don't like Barry Bonds.
But they hold, the fact of the matter is, I wrote this piece, when was this? In May, that the Pirates are right to honor Barry Bonds, but some will never forgive him. And the comments afterward, Paul, I'm telling you, are laced is invective a word? Invective? Is that a word?
I think it might be a word.
Insults for him on that throw.
Right.
Listen. The bottom line is, for unfair or unfair, Barry Bonds is attached to the most painful memory maybe in the history of Pittsburgh sports. Maybe.
Yeah.
He's the guy attached to that. 412-928-9370. 928-9370.
I'm just saying, if you ask me, which you did.
Yeah.
There are bigger villains.
I agree.
In that ninth inning.
Yeah.
Than Barry Bonds.
Absolutely.
It'd be one thing if Barry Bonds missed the ball, or Barry Bonds threw one or airmailed one over you know, LaValliere's head or whatever, and it went
yes.
into the... It'd be one thing if... But he didn't. He came up, he made a play, he made a throw. It was a half a second late.
We agree. But that's a different question than do people blame him for that?
Well,
and is that
again,
why they
I
hate
think
him?
The people that blame him, I think it's a chicken or the egg for... I think people that hate him blame him for that.
Yeah.
That's all. Anyway,
I think there may be some leftover feelings, but I don't think you'll see. You might see a few people boo. Let's hear from people. Are you going to the game Saturday? And what's your reaction going to be for Bonds? It's also, Paul, so long ago, almost like with Yager, a lot of people in the stands on Saturday have no memory of Barry Bonds here. That was the early 90s. So people who, let's say you're born in 94, how old are you? 28?
70.
What?
No.
You're 28.
If you're born in 94?
You're 30.
You're 30.
They have no memory of Barry Bonds here. They have no, right. no feelings attached
if you're
to him.
Probably, let's say if you're born in 1990, go all the way to 34
Yeah,
years
you're
old.
Right. Of course, if you were 1 year old, you have no then. Right.
You know what I'm saying?
People in their 30s have no memory of him. Limits, you came back at Paul. You. How old are you?
I'm 23.
Why do you hold things against Barry Bonds?
I think the first thing I think of when I think of Barry Bonds is steroids. And it's the first thing I think of when I think of Roger Clemens as well. And I know I'll get attacked for that and everything. But at the same time, I did not live through that era. I did not live through 90, 91, 92. Or, you know, be old enough to be able to understand everything with the trials in 04. And all the scandals that went on in the steroid era,
would you
just
boo
in
him?
General.
Would you boo Bonds if you went
I would
to the
just,
game Saturday?
I wouldn't boo or cheer.
He wouldn't
would
even
just,
cheer.
I would just sit there. And
if Limits were there, he wouldn't
subtly
cheer.
Subtly clap.
What do you think of that?
Well,
he would sit silently, and I respect that opinion.
I don't
opinion.
Like Bonds. I think he's a jerk.
There you go. There you go. There
well,
you go.
Well, is he a jerk, and is he a cheater?
He's both are true. At least the cheater part is true.
Is it?
The cheater part is true.
Is it?
What do you mean?
I mean, I don't know.
Do you think he... Are you questioning whether steroids were against the rules or whether he took them?
All I know is that both.
You're questioning whether he took them. His head went from the size of a tennis ball
lost all his hair
to bigger than Mulsey's.
That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is nobody seemed to care about steroids when home runs were saving baseball.
That's also a different question.
It only became an issue when Barry Bonds was involved in it. If Barry Bonds would not have been involved in it, Clemens would be in the Hall of Fame, A-Rod would be in the Hall of Fame, McGuire would be in the Hall of Fame, and nobody would be taking this ridiculously idiotic moral stance about, well, I can't vote for him for the Hall of Fame because of steroids.
But I know. I agree. He should be in the Hall of Fame, and you might be right about all that. But that's a different
about Bonds.
That's a different question than did he cheat? The answer is obviously yes. Whatever.
Then everybody in that era cheated in my mind, including
okay.
guys like Cal Ripken, who, to me, I looked at his body and the way that it did and how quickly he was recovering, the fact that he played 2,200 games. You looked all of a sudden, I don't know, did he take them? I don't know if he didn't or did. If he did or he didn't.
Well, we know Bonds did. Whatever we think of that, and I think he
middle
should.
Middle infielders did.
He should absolutely be in the Hall of Fame. But the question was.
Did.
Limits doesn't like him because he had an abrasive personality and
Limits,
he cheated.
Limits, who wasn't even born around when he was playing
well,
for the
Pirates.
You
can look back and...
I've gone back and studied a lot of Bonds things. I've seen the documentary they did that Ron was in about Bonds.
Are you stripping Limits of his legitimate opinion?
Yes.
I don't care. That's my opinion. I stick by it.
And I like that.
Yes.
And I respect it. I mostly agree with Paul, though. Do you think he should be in the Hall of Fame?
I've started to soften my stance on that because I know that there are guys that are in the Hall of Fame that are steroids guys. Like, Pudge Rodriguez is more than likely a steroid guy.
Are we getting calls on this?
Oh, there's a ton of calls on
it. All right, then let's hear calls on Bonds.
But no, right now, as it stands right now, I would not put him in the Hall of Fame, no. But I think Pete Rose should be in. That could be another discussion.
Well, wait a second. Pete Rose bet on his own team, so he cheated. He broke
the rules.
That
didn't affect his playing career,
and
though.
And he was as abrasive as anybody.
He should be in due to his playing career.
Okay.
And the all-time hits leader.
I hear that.
It's different than his managerial career. You can put an asterisk by it.
Paul's fired up, so beware of that if you're calling.
But I'm
curious if you're going to the game Saturday. Paul asked, what will your reaction be? City Limits said if he was there, he'd have no reaction. And so if everybody who went to the game went with the City Limits plan, Barry Bonds would be introduced and there would be dead silence. Are you aware of that, Limits?
Yeah, I guess so.
And you're willing to live with that?
Yeah, I would maybe do like a very subtle, unentertained clap, just whatever. But no, I'm not be excited and cheer. I would be for Leland and Manny Sanguin.
Let's go to the lines.
Here's Jay in Jacksonville.
Hi, Jay.
Guys, I agree and disagree. I'm all for Bonds being in the Hall of Fame. So many people did that bull crap in the 90s. But there's one thing I disagree. As I recall, I've watched baseball since 1977, know the Pirates inside and out, the minor league guys, everything. Vance Leick didn't tell him, from what I recall, Bonds to go to the right or to the left. He said, move the F up 5-6 steps. You're not batting. Mike Schmidt's not batting. Francisco Cabrera is. He's not going to hit it. He has no chance of hitting it over your head. Move the F up 5-6-7 7 steps.
Yeah.
You're too effing deep.
And no, he did tell him that. That's a fact.
He would have cut him off.
He did tell him that.
Cabrera would have been out.
That's documented history. Now, whether Vance Leick was right or not, I don't know. We appreciate the call. Here's what Vance Leick told ESPN, Paul, just for the record.
Mm-hmm.
He said, I got his attention. I got Barry's attention before the Cabrera hit.
Right.
But he flipped me the bird. He put his hand up and said, I'll play where I want to play. And said, I'll play where I want to play. Bonds himself has said that he thought he made a pretty good play on the ball, and a lot of people agree on that, too. Mike LaValliere. Here's what I actually asked Bonds this once, Paul. Did you know that?
Okay.
In the Pirates clubhouse. I think he was with San Fran at the time. I told him, I said, Leland, McClendon, and plenty of others have said it was a good play. Vance Leick obviously said he told you to move. Here's what Barry Bonds told me. Quote, if I played any shallower, that ball probably would have gotten past me. I had to come over toward my left, then crossfire it. You can go back and look at the history of the game of baseball, Bonds said, and how many guys have thrown guys out in that situation.
Yeah. How many? In that situation.
I don't know. That's just his take. If I played any shallower, the ball gets past me. Mike LaValliere, the catcher, I called him when I was doing this story a while ago and said, what was your take on the play? He said, or on the throw specifically. He said, you know what? Put it this way. It was a throw where he ended up safe. Was it a terrible throw? No, it wasn't terrible. But if it was 2 feet further to the left, Sid Bream is out. That's reasonable. I thought it was a hell of a play to make the crossfire play.
And if Sid Bream was out, do you know what would have happened?
People would have loved Barry Bonds. Well,
they had to go to extra
game?
Innings.
Yeah, it was a tie game.
They had to go to extra innings.
Right. If he's out and they win.
Because Jose Lien gave him a fourth out.
Yeah.
And if Jose Lien makes a play, the whole Barry Bonds thing never even happens.
Right, but it did.
My point is, that was the biggest play in that inning wasn't a bang-bang throw from left field to home that probably 50-50 if you get him out or not. It was a ground ball that Jose Lien needs to field 100 times out of 100, and if he does, we're not even talking about the Barry Bonds play.
I know, but we are, because it still happened.
Because it was Barry Bonds.
And because, maybe, Van Slyke told him to move up, and Van Slyke says, Barry, flip me the bird. Which is a great line, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
Next call.
Of course, you know, because Andy Van Slyke says this, it's gospel.
Well, I don't think that. I think, but he did say it.
Did he?
What?
During the game, did he say that?
Oh, no.
Or is he just saying that he said it.
Yeah,
exactly.
Who knows?
And because it's Andy Van Slyke, who, by the way, quite often was as big of a jerk as Barry Bonds was to fans and to everybody else. But for whatever reason, he's beloved, and he's the guy that everyone loves, and we bring him back. And he had a, you know, I was watching, what do they call that during the rain delay? Inside
Pirates baseball.
They had this big loving feature about Andy Van Slyke and fans signing him, signing autographs, and all this wonderful love for the guy, which he was a great player. But let's not act like he wasn't a jerk at times, too, when he was here. And let's not act like, you know, he
and Bonilla, too.
He didn't do things during those playoffs that led to them losing.
All agreed. But it's clear that there's still a large faction of fans in this town who don't like Barry Bonds.
Yeah, of course. And listen, I'm okay with that. Here's what I wish people would just say. I don't like Barry Bonds.
They do say that. They do.
No, they come up with all this other nonsense. This other nonsense. Well, the Sid Bream player, this player, that player. He didn't do it. Okay, let's judge every player by that.
Put bluntly.
But they don't. They say they just say you don't like a guy. That's all I care about.
Well, aren't they allowed to say that they don't like the play he made?
That's fine. My point is, you asked me, you know, well, you know, what are people going to remember about Barry Bonds? A guy who was here from what, like 87 to 93?
Yeah.
And was the best player in the league, what, 5 of those 7 years or something like that, whatever it was? Okay. If you're going to tell me that, oh, well, you know, I don't like him because he didn't make a bang-bang 50-50 play, right? I'm going to tell you, you're lying to me. You just don't like him, period.
He is attached. He became the face of the most painful play maybe in the history of this town, maybe unfairly, but I just think
what I'm saying
I
is,
just think that's
what
a fact.
What I'm saying is people that are still holding that play against him just don't like him.
Yeah, probably.
Okay, fine. He didn't make a play. It was a bang-bang play. It was a 50-50 play, no matter what you want to say, right? I would be willing to bet if you played that play 100 times, 50 times it'd be an out, 50 times the guy would be...
Maybe he should have moved in.
Maybe if he moves in, it's a different angle and the ball gets past him.
That's what he said. That's what Bond
says. My point is, you know, everybody has all these what-ifs. My thing is, it'd be one thing if he made like a just an egregious error.
Like a Bill Buchner play.
Oh, yeah, right. Something like that.
No, I'm with
you. Egregious error.
We're talking about different things.
To me,
I'm with you.
As somebody who literally, okay, was in a room with like 30 people watching this game, as somebody who went to a lot of Pirate games back then, because I was at Point Park, we went across the bridge, you could scalp tickets for a dollar to get into games. We went to Pirate games all the time. As somebody who was... followed that team for 3 years. The Sid Bream game, to me, the villain in that game is A, Jose Leaned, more than anybody else, Jose Leaned. And nobody ever wants to bring him up, right?
Well, they do. They do bring up Jose
Sid Bream. Stan Belinda, who was your quote-unquote closer, right? The umpire getting sick, and then all of a sudden the strike zone changed because it was a new umpire.
Yeah.
Right? Cecil Espy playing way off the line and allowing a leadoff double. There's at least four more villains in that ninth inning than Barry Bonds.
Yes. But there's also that Barry Bonds was an MVP who never hit in the playoffs. There's that. And there's that he was a jerk.
Yeah. Well, he was a jerk.
Yeah.
Listen.
And he cheated. So,
I'm okay with you.
If people want to not like him, I'm willing to honor that.
Right, but just say you don't like him.
Okay.
That's all I'm saying. This whole thing we do where we don't like a guy, you know? And I'll give you a great example. There are some people, even at this station, who hate Ben Roethlisberger, can never give him any credit, right? The guy was he was a great, great player. Was he a jerk? Yeah. Did he conduct himself the wrong way a lot of times? Yeah. Were there some big games where he didn't come through? Yeah. But for the most part, he was, you know, you can make an argument, the best quarterback, given the difference, the different eras and stuff, the best quarterback the Steelers ever had. So I'm just one of those people, I can separate that. I thought Ben, the way he conducted himself was obviously not good. And he, you know, there's far too many stories of him acting like a jerk. But guess what? I can also say he probably, you want to talk about the reason number one Mike Tomlin is, you know, never had a losing season.
Yeah,
because he had Ben every year,
and he delivered some great playoff memories, including a legendary drive.
Right, but my point is, he had Ben, and nobody, you know, that Ben was a great player.
Next call.
Here's Don in Chambersburg.
What's up?
Hey Joe. Hey Paul.
Hello.
Hey, real quick on Bonds. I'm 35. Just a couple quick points. So that story about Bonds and Van Slyke. It becomes a fish story eventually, like every time I hear it. I'm not saying you guys, but every time I hear it, it gets exaggerated even more. It happens. Let's move on. You know what I mean? Like, in terms of fan-wise, like, I don't hold Bonds.
What do you mean? What do you mean it gets exaggerated even more? Van Slyke went on the record with what he told Bonds.
No, I know, but I mean, it's just, I'm saying not between those two. I'm saying fans talk about back and forth, like what happened and everything like that.
Yeah.
So,
well,
again,
I mean,
I'm not saying.
Listen. I certainly understand the scrutiny of the play. It's only the most, you know, we talk about
sure.
The immaculate reception on the other side of things, the greatest play maybe, or Mazeroski's homer. This is this play is going to get talked about
it
forever.
Should. It
forever.
Should. It should.
No, I understand
the play
that, but
should
I'm
be
saying,
talked
like,
about.
To Paul's point, I guess, you know, I mean, Vance likes saying that afterwards. Who knows what actually happened at the time? You know what I mean? Like, it's banter back and forth, but that's neither here nor there. But to Paul's point, too, about steroids and Bonds, baseball is just a statistics game, and so I agree with Paul when everybody cared about steroids when Bonds broke the record, but I don't think it was Barry Bonds specifically. I think it was just because somebody cheated and broke the home run record. So, like, if anybody knew that somebody cheated and broke the hallowed home run record, I think that the baseball community...
Well, then you don't agree with Paul, because Paul said it was absolutely about him being Barry Bonds, and Paul said if it was somebody, basically, I think, Paul, if it was somebody else who broke the record and cheated... then they'd all still be in the Hall of Fame, right?
Did Mark McGwire break the record?
Yeah.
Well,
at one point.
Okay. So what are we
for
talking
for single
about?
Season.
Right. What are we talking about then?
What do you mean? What's your point?
My point is that was the hallowed record. The single season, what is it, 61 or whatever? That was
right.
The hallowed record.
Yeah.
McGwire broke that.
And you're talking about 756 more than anything.
Yeah, so that's what I mean, the total record.
Right, but I'm the to me, the 61 was like the hallowed record. And it was broke by two guys whose arms looked like they were Popeye after he ate spinach.
Yeah.
But nobody wanted to say, well, you know, why? Because they were saving baseball with their home run chase.
Sure, it's very hypocritical, but those two guys also got dragged in front of Congress and humiliated forever, too. It's not like Barry's the only guy that got picked on here.
If Barry Bonds would not have ever been involved in it, he'd have just had the career that he had where he was like a 30 home run guy with 40, you know, 30, 35 steals and, you know, whatever. I fully believe that we would not be talking about steroids. And here's how I know, okay? Why is baseball the only sport where we worry about steroids?
Because baseball is more reliant on these hallowed numbers than any other sport.
Again,
and old sports writers love that.
That's my point. Like, for instance, you know, half of the Steelers from the 70s, it seems like half the Steelers from the 70s or, you know, a bunch of them have died early or have had all kinds of issues because that whole entire team basically was built on steroids. That era of football was built on steroids.
Yeah.
And you can't tell me now, even now, when we've got guys that are 300, you know, 280, 290, 300 pounds and they run like a 4.5. Okay, that's all natural.
So
I'm
everybody
sure.
cheats, therefore Bonds
no,
should
my,
be.
My point is, baseball is the only sport where we seem to make this whole big ordeal about steroids.
Right.
Every other sport.
Some people do, anyways.
Every other sport where it happens, nobody seems to care about it.
And I gave you what I think is the answer. That older sports writers live for those hallowed numbers. The numbers mean more to people in baseball.
Like, when do we see it in hockey and in basketball?
Well,
why it mattered to them. And I completely disagree and have written and said 100 million times that every steroid guy should be in the Hall of Fame because we don't know who did it and who didn't.
What I'm saying is...
But if your question is, why is it that way, I think I answered it. Because the numbers in baseball matter more to people
than
any other.
That's silly.
Well, maybe, but that's the reason why.
That's silly to me. I'm sorry. It just is. You can't you tell me that you know these old time sports writers are that jammed up about it. I'm telling you.
Why do you think the reason is?
Because of Barry Bonds. They all hate Barry Bonds.
So if it came out that Sosa and McGuire cheated, they'd be in the Hall of Fame. Roger Clemens yes. would be in the Hall of Fame.
Yes.
And none of the sports writers would care that McGuire was on steroids when he broke the hallowed record.
They wouldn't.
I disagree.
They would have looked a different way. They would have looked another way. And the other part of it is there wouldn't have been all these investigations and reinvestigations and there wouldn't have been all that stuff. It would have went away. Just like a lot of things went away quickly. It's amazing how sports writers and sports leagues in general can make narratives go away immediately if they want them to. Classic example is in recent classic example. You know, the biggest star in baseball is embroiled in a gambling, and the thing went away in like 24 hours. And they explained it away. Because it's normal that every translator would have $4.6 million to gamble with, and whoever he's getting it from would have no idea what's going on. But again, nobody wanted to really ask questions, so it just kind of goes away. It's amazing how that happens.
You don't think people ask the questions that needed to be asked in that?
I don't think it's possible, given how quickly the thing went away. I mean, they went for years and years and years of investigating the steroid story. All I'm saying is it's amazing how media narratives and leagues can basically make things go away they want to go away quickly. Which, if Bonds wasn't embroiled in it, I'd be willing to bet it would have went away quickly.
Should he have been embroiled in it? Did you read the book Game of Shadows?
I think that the era from 1992 to about 2004, I don't believe that anybody was not using steroids, so I don't care.
I know, but it's a bigger story when the guy who sets the all-time home run record has a head the size of the Empire State Building.
Matter.
It matters a lot.
It doesn't matter.
It matters a lot.
It was the steroid era.
He was the poster child, as he should have been.
How many of the records were set before they allowed black people to play in baseball? So should we look at those records differently? Because some of the records
I
we're
do.
Talking about.
Yeah. I do. Okay, well, I look at everything differently.
Okay, well, then my point is every era has an era where it's an era and you say, okay, this was the dead ball era. This was the high mound era.
Sure.
This was
and that's, the why era he should be, the, that's why he should be in the Hall of Fame. You're acting right. like it was a non-story that the guy's head was bigger than two Mulsey craniums and he set the all-time home run record.
But again,
did you want the media to ignore it?
What do you mean?
You said it's a media narrative that they wanted to pin it all on Barry Bonds and it all sprang from there.
It is.
So if they had that information, should the book on him never have been written?
What?
Game of Shadows?
What do you
mean? Where they revealed every way that he cheated?
Again, my point is it's amazing how we can create a narrative based on a story we want to tell.
The story we want to tell is that he cheated his ass off to set the home run record. Fact.
So did
McGuire. He should be in the Hall of Fame.
So did McGuire.
Yeah, and he was dragged in front of Congress too, and books were written on him too.
So did McGuire.
So did Sosa.
So my point is, that era was the steroid era.
Yeah, it's still a story that needed to be written.
Okay, maybe it was, but it's not something that he should be in the Hall of Fame. Number one,
I agree.
Number two, again, how many of the pitchers that he played against were
probably
steroids as well?
Probably lots.
So again. The other thing is, I don't believe steroids.
And by the way, it was Canseco that blew the whole thing open, not Barry Bonds. It was Canseco that made all of that a story. Let's come back to this.
Well, hold up. Again, Canseco, McGuire, everybody knew what was going on. But nobody wanted to write about it.
I'm not sure people knew until Canseco told them what was going on.
I remember when Rick Raleigh wrote a story about McGuire during the home run chase, and he said, yeah, I asked McGuire about some of the substances that were in his locker, creatines and, different things that I saw and this and that, and, I approached it. And then I remember Rick Raleigh basically being ostracized because he said to Sammy Sosa, will you take a drug test right now? He was the only one that was willing to ask questions, and he became ostracized until Barry Bonds got involved.
No, until Jose Canseco got involved.
No, until
he broke the story.
He didn't break the story.
He did break the story.
He didn't.
Yes,
everybody
he did.
Knew what was going on. If you didn't
they had
know,
suspicions. You knew they were shooting needles in their ass?
So you knew that? So let
the
me
media
ask you a
knew
question.
That.
Let me ask you a question. If you have suspicions.
Yeah.
And you're a journalist. Even in 2024.
Right.
Isn't it incumbent on you to dig into that to find out what it
no,
is?
No, your point is they didn't and they should have left it alone forever then.
No, my point is they didn't
right.
because they didn't want to.
I agree.
And they probably would never have if Barry Bonds didn't start doing what he was doing. Then all of a sudden, Canseco's words, a couple things coming out of a lab. Then all of a sudden, we're going to dig into stuff that was there for the every person that really cared.
So because they ignored it at first, they should have ignored it forever. That's your point?
Because what I'm saying is they didn't give a damn until Barry Bonds was involved. Then all of a sudden,
what came first, Bonds or Canseco?
We can't have Barry Bonds having the record. We can't have him being involved in this when it was Sosa and McGuire and this. That was fine. Because it was saving
baseball.
Well,
that also came along like 10 years later.
What are you talking about?
Him setting the all-time home run record.
Who?
Bonds.
But he was hitting like 60, 70 home runs in right around that same time.
Maybe that was the
whole point. My whole point is they didn't give a damn about it until Bonds was involved in it. Then all of a sudden we want to listen to the Consecos of the world. Then all of a sudden we want to listen to these wackos from these labs. Then all of a sudden we want to do this. Then all of a sudden we want to go find out and do some investigative reporting. Then all of a sudden because we want to discredit one guy, and if that means we got to take all of them down, we do. And that's what's happened. That's what happened.
So are you saying they shouldn't have done that then? They shouldn't have investigated it ever or no?
What?
All of it.
I'm saying you're hypocritical when you're selective about what you're going to not overlook and what you're not going to overlook.
412.
I'm saying you're hypocritical. That's yes. Absolutely. You're being a hypocrite when this guy, when we have a strike, our precious little sport is, losing all kinds of popularity. Two guys come along. One, like I said, whose forearms looked like he was Popeye after he ate spinach. Okay. One who, if you look at Mark McGuire in the early 90s versus the late 90s, anybody could see, well, either he's got the most incredible trainer in America, maybe a miracle worker.
Were you writing at the time?
What?
You should have broken the story.
Yes, because I was, let's see, at that time I was covering high school
Well, one
girls,
of us would have. One of us definitely would have broken the story.
Time. I was covering
you
high school girls basketball
the
at the time. I was writing about high school Whippeel football games.
You I feel bad for our mystery guest. Our mystery guest is now half an hour. He's going to be half an hour late now.
He's going to have to be a mystery guest tomorrow. With Paul.
Poor mystery guest.
412.
Paul ruined mystery guest.
And now Paul's going to lunch.
I gotta leave. I'll be back.
What the hell is going on here?
Where's he going?
The boss wants him for lunch.
Oh, nice.
I'll be back.
Have fun, Paul.
412-928.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Hey, fantasy football owners. The road to winning your fantasy football championship starts now. I'm Matt Harmon from Reception Perception. Join me and James Coe as we take a deep dive into the position that's going to make or break your fantasy roster. Wide receivers. We analyze route running, target share, and all the metrics that matter, giving you the insights you need to draft the best wide receivers. As you prep for your draft, let us give you the coverage you need. Follow and listen to Reception Perception on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.